And what we're doing is we're going through the definition, the biblical definition of what agape love is. What agape love is. Verse 3 says, "And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing." And we talked last week about how anything we do must be infused with love. Otherwise, what are we? We're braggadocious. Otherwise, we're doing it to be seen. Otherwise, we're trying to gather attention to ourselves. No, when we do anything, no matter what kind of behavior, no matter what kind of kindness, no matter what kind of lesson we're trying to teach, love must be the focus. Well, I'll show them. I'll do this and because they did that, and that'll show them. No, what we do ought to be out of love. What we do ought to be out of love. That old phrase, kill them with kindness. You shouldn't be trying to kill them when you're killing them with kindness. It kind of throws off the purpose of the word kindness. At some point, it's just being good for revenge. No, what we do must be done out of love. Verse 4, charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. Doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil. Focusing in on that verse this morning, looking at that first part, does not behave unseemly. Every now and then you'll see a married couple and they'll not act married. And it's typically not the young ones. More often than not, it is those who have been around the block a few times, where you go to talk to them and they are two different and distinct people. And they don't have very nice pet names for each other. At first it's honey, baby, sweetie, lovely, sugar booger, whatever it is you call them. And then after a while it's the old ball and chain, is the old man. Well, you're going to have to go talk to him. I heard somebody say that one time. Well, you're going to have to go talk to him. And I go, oh. You're angry with that him. You told me everything I need to know about your relationship in that him. She's crazy. He's out of his mind. He's just an old man. And it goes on and on and on. Marriage ought to look like marriage. Married couple ought to look like married people. There was a couple here on Friday, Carl and Melissa Lentz. They were the teen teachers down there at Flat Rock when I was going through. They stayed that way for quite some time after, too. And they are one of the most in love, lovey-dovey, coupley couples you will ever see in your life. You never question it in the way that they speak to each other, in the way that his arm kind of always just kind of finds its way around her. And just in their interaction, you go, this is a married couple. Now, I sit there and they get teased every now and then for being so lovey-dovey for as long as they've been married. And we fight. We disagree. We have all the struggles everybody else has. But we also have this. When we say that love does not behave unseemly, if we love somebody, it ought to look like we love them. Especially when we are referring to marriage. Now, if we're talking about loving fellow church members, it ought to look like we love them. Not that we're putting on a show, but all the evidence is there. You know, we're there for them. We have a desire for their good, and we put the effort in for their good. But also, we are avoiding things that degrade or destroy that relationship. We don't touch them. Even down to the way we have other friendships. When Danielle and I got married, there were some friendships I had that changed. I no longer communicate to them the way that I did. And most and many of them were females. Why? Because Danielle didn't trust me. Why? Because she was overbearing. Why? Because I could not be trusted. No, because I wanted to prove to her I could be trusted. It was very important to me that my wife never look over at what I'm doing and worry about what I am doing. It is not about me cutting myself in half so that she will be happy and I'll be somewhat presentable to her. No, I want her to see. You have nothing to worry about here. When we got phones that were smart enough to have passcodes on them, right? When those came around, We had each other's passcodes. Now, why did I give her the passcode to my phone? Because she didn't trust me? Because I gave her reason to doubt? No, because I didn't want her to have reason to doubt. You know how often she checks my phone? If you find out, let me know. I've got no idea. I've never seen it. But if anything happens, she could get in there real quick. If her phone's dead and we need a cell phone real fast, she's in. Why? Because why would I have a little pocket where I'm hiding something from her? And the same goes on the other side. I can get into her phone. She asks me every now and then. She goes, well, what's your password? I go, Danielle, I've only had two passwords since we've met, and you know both of them. That's it. I don't have anything private. I don't have anything secret. I don't have anything she can't see. Why? Because I want her to see. Everything I am, you have. Everything I do belongs to you. Everything I own, it all is yours. To hide something, to have pockets away. Now, does that mean I don't have my hobbies? Of course I have my hobbies. Do I have to sit there and say, all right, listen, leaving gas station, turning left. No, that's where we get to not trusting anymore. But when I can sit there and honestly recount to her my day without having to hide anything, that's good. Now, it changes a little bit around her birthday and Christmas, right? We've got rules in our house for spending money. At a certain dollar amount, one has to call the other and say, hey, this is what we are doing. This is what I am doing. I only get to break that rule at Christmas, and man, I love breaking that rule. We get together. She's like, all right, what's the budget? And we work out all the numbers. And okay, now, what are we doing for our gifts? And she'll say something like, keep it around this much. We shouldn't spend more than this much. Me, knowing that I followed my dad's trick of squirreling money away throughout the year, will be gladly breaking that rule. And I make sure it doesn't hurt the budget either, because that's when I get in trouble. Right? You gotta take it out of your spending money. But oh my, to make sure that what I do shows and builds the relationship, from my friendships to the money that I spend to our communication. In our communication, if you have in your marriage somebody, one person says, I wish you would stop talking like that. If you love them and you sought their comfort and you sought their peace, you would change. You mean I would have to give away that freedom? I'm telling you that it is the best way to do it. If you're doing abusive language, if you're doing something hurtful, it shouldn't be a matter of surrendering a piece of who you are. It should be repenting of sin, right? If you're sinning in your communication, you repent of that. You owe that to God. This is not a matter of you having to wear handcuffs or a literal ball and chain being wrapped around you. He just controls everything. No, if you love somebody, you want them comfortable, right? That's my thought. There was a time in our lives where on Saturdays, Xander would want to come to work with me. And there'd be nobody in the office. It was just my day to take a couple tours and do things like that. So I'd bring Xander in to work with me. And before I brought him in on Friday, as we were shutting down, I'd clock out and I'd just kind of get things ready for him to come in. And he had his own little desk and his own little chair and a little space heater to sit by him. And I got crayons and coloring books and laid it out there. I prepared that spot for him. Now listen, I was clocked out. I could have gone home. I could have been on home on a Friday, not having to think about these things. Why do you do it? Because you love the person, right? We want to make sure the other one's comfortable. In our physical treatment. I remember a family member was having a conversation with another man, and it bothered me. Because it was like this. He was talking about somebody who had hit their wives or on a regular basis hit their wife. And the phrase that he used was, but that's none of our business. Can I tell you something? That's wrong. Physical violence between partners is wrong. And we ought to want to drag that kind of guy out back and put our hands on him. Now, that's sinful too. Don't do it. But that ought to be our response and our desire. Well, Pastor, would you ever call the cops if you found out that was going on? Yeah, and then I'd pray the cops got there first. It's wrong. Well, you know, back in our day, it was wrong then. Well, brother, you got to understand, no, I don't. It's sin. You point to me in Scripture where it says that a wife or a husband ought to be wailing on each other. You show me. You ain't going to find it. You want to know why? Because that level of violence is wrong. Bible says no striker. We see in the Bible so often where godly men are told, or godly people are told, not to be violent people unless the situation calls for it. A burnt dinner or a sassy phrase or coming home drunk, whatever it is not permission for physical violence. Well, what do we do if it happens? That person ought to go to jail until they have a way of calming down. That's true. That's true. That person ought to be put in time out. We had a relative who spent some time in jail, and Xander asked, this was a few years ago, Xander asked, well, where did they go? I said, they are at summer camp. Is it a special adult summer camp? The specialist adult summer camp you'll ever find. What's so special about it? It goes all year. And sometimes you can stay for many years. They need to go to a timeout. Counseling, therapy. These things must happen. That is unseemly behavior in marriage. It's unseemly behavior for the people you find on the street. We must not behave unseemly. No lies, no cheating, no theft, no hurtful phrases. And as we continue on in this verse, we see even more. Seeks not her own. To seek not her own. What does that mean? In the King James there, seeketh not her own. What does that mean? Love doesn't love so it can get its way. Well, hey, if I participate in this, what do I get out of it? I knew a young man who did that. Hey, listen, if I come over and help build the ramp up to the church, what do we get out of it? You just kind of go over to the young man and you go, a ramp that leads up to the church. Well, if I help come over here and we build this fire pit, what do I get out of it? A fire pit to sit around. I get what he's asking, but the answer is clear. You get a place to fellowship. You get an extra thing in the church to help people out. Well, what do I get in marriage? If I put in 30, 40, 50, 60 years in marriage, what do I get out of it? Companionship, love, friendship, fruit of the Spirit, all the wonderful things that come from having a companion like that. That's what you get out of it. Yeah, it feels like I should have more. Well, then you don't actually love. You're just alone. I've met people who married just because they felt alone. And they found the first person up for the job, and it was miserable. I think of these green card marriages. Well, I want a green card, and you're an American citizen, so for X amount of dollars, we'll come in, and we're going to see some of that coming back. We're going to see marital fraud stepping, or green card fraud becoming a little bit more popular. But I tell you what, that is not the purpose of marriage, for you to get something out of it. Oh, you will. Oh, my, you will. I realized it quickly. Danielle and I, we spent as much time as possible. She went down south for a wedding, and I found myself for the first time in all of my life having a hard time going to sleep. Now listen, when I was young, I'd sleep anywhere. There was no stopping me from sleeping. I could sleep on the couch, I could sleep on the floor, I could sleep on the ground outside. Nothing stopped me from sleeping until maybe a year or so into my marriage when my wife left town. I couldn't sleep. I'd call her right before I went to bed. I'd call her again right early in the morning. Why? Because I missed her. There's lots you get out of marriage, but you're not in it for what you can get. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, but it's not about seeking your own. And many people, they turn it into a competition. Who's the head of the house? Who wears the pants in this relationship? Who's this? Who's that? Listen, God settled it. The man is the head of the house. The man is the head of the house. And I know today that's offensive to some, but let me tell you this. Anything with two heads struggles. I heard that from a preacher. Anything with two heads struggles. You ever see an animal with two heads? It does not look like it's having a good time. There was this turtle that we saw, that we used to watch videos of with the kids, had two heads. Man, that thing always seemed like it was having a hard time. The person would say, oh, this head's the only one eating. The other head won't eat. And I don't know how that's going to affect it. I don't know what that's going to do. Anything with two heads is going to struggle. But it is not ownership as we think. It is two becoming one with the man calling the final vote. And when the man calls that vote, it is not because he is of superior intellect to the wife. As a matter of fact, he is a fool if he does not listen to his wife. He did not make man naturally more intelligent. It is necessary that two people are involved. And we have the discussion and, all right, well, I think we ought to do this. And men, if you pull that card and you're wrong, you got to turn around and say you're sorry. And that hurts, doesn't it? That hurts. Hey, honey, remember that thing where we disagreed and you're like, all right, fine, I'll give it over to you, whatever you want to do. And I said, okay. And I did what I wanted to do and I disregarded what you had to say. She'll go, yeah. And I go, you're right, I'm sorry. As a matter of fact, that happened this weekend. Hey, I think that we ought to do this. All right, this is kind of what I was thinking, though, for this reason. I think it'll be okay. It wasn't okay. I had to go back. You're right. You're right. My other favorite is when we're both wrong. You ever have that happen? When we're both wrong. I'm like, well, I didn't see that coming. She goes, me neither. And what is that? That's a learning curve. And we both process that. I was talking to Charlie this morning. Sometimes there's moments where you turn over and you say, hey, listen, there's certain things I'm not comfortable making decisions on my own. I tap in my wife. There's a reason why in this church I call her my left brain. She is my organization. I've had some people ask me recently, well, what time does this start? What time does this start? And what I gave you was the time I'm going to be there because that's what I've got in my notes. So if we're supposed to be somewhere at 5, you better believe I am there at 3. Why? Because that's what the pastor does, right? So in my 3. Yeah, but doesn't it start till then? And if I start thinking like that, I'll show up 15 minutes before it starts, like many others do. Oh no, I'm the pastor. I gotta be there. I gotta get my head straight. I gotta pray on this. There's too much for me to do for me to just show up. No, 3. So that's why, hun, it takes 2. This afternoon, I don't get to decide what I am going to do. I can't just unilaterally decide I'm going to go over here or go over there. I made a commitment to a young woman 15 years ago. So I run it through her. Hey, hon, what are you doing? Now she knows what I'm going to do. I'm going to stay here at the church like I always do. But when I plan my week, I sit down with my wife. She's not property. She's my best friend. I may be the head of the home, but I'm only the head of the home as much as I am under submission to Christ. I have to be a good husband for that to work. Man, I knew a lady one time, her husband wasn't a churchgoer, wasn't interested, was kind of very much against a lot of things that the church would do. And finally he said, all right, well, I don't want to go to that church. This church has a softball team. And I want to go over to this church. If I got to go to a church, this is a church I'm going to go to. And since I'm the head of this house, this is what we're going to go to. It wasn't no kind of church. It was more of a social club than anything else. No real doctrine, no real anything like that. Just a group of people having a good time on a Sunday with lots of different sports and activities and things. She goes, well, I have to follow my husband. Men, for that behavior, God is going to deal very, very hard with you. Very, very hard. It is not that one voice is silenced. It is that in difficult situations where there is not a solid consensus, we prayed as a couple, we worked through it as a couple, the man takes what God would have us to, what he believes God would have us to do, and he takes all the facts mucked together by the husband and the wife, and he makes the final call. But ladies, don't you ever think that this means that this diminishes your value. Your value is 1,000% necessary for the decisions to be made, and men the same. It does not mean that you are altogether wise, holy, and knowledgeable. You must become that way. You have to put in the work to be there. But you got to sit down and you got to listen so that wisdom and knowledge merge together, and the best thing takes place, but it cannot be one vaunting for itself, as we have said, or one that seeks their own. My husband will do exactly what I say, or he'll get an earful. Woman, you better do exactly what I tell you to do when I tell you to do it. That's ownership. And it happens on both sides, by the way. I've met some people sit there, all they do is insult their husband, put their husband down. Why? Because feminism. And I've met other men who've done the exact same thing to their wives. Why? Because of insecurity. I got to make her feel like she's less so I can feel like something. No. As we talked about at the wedding, men, we pour value into our wives. We pour love into our wives. We let her feel the love that we have for her at all times. Women, you turn and you respect your husbands. You don't disrespect him. You don't lay him out. You don't be mean to him. You don't make him the butt of every joke you've got, whether it's to his face or with a bunch of the ladies down there at the club. No, we respect and love each other. You are part of a thing now. You are part of a commitment. Somebody asked me, well, Matt, does Danielle have permission to go? I go, why do you ask like that? I go, did you submit a permission slip? Did I know about it days ahead of time? And then somebody called us one time at a family get-together. They were talking about, they go do the Nutcracker every year. And they were kind of getting to the details. She goes, all right, let me go talk to Matt. And so we go, well, you need permission? What, are you one of his children? What are... And I kind of got involved because this kind of upset her a little bit. I kind of got involved in the conversation. I go, no, because we have a certain amount of money that we don't spend without asking each other. I don't do it. She doesn't do it. It's called love and respect towards each other. It's not about permission. It's about, is it feasible? Is the day free? Is the finances free? Are you going to be able to be in the area for it? Who's going to have the kids? What are we doing for dinner? What is the plan? Instead of this feminist or chauvinist nonsense of who is the better of the two. You're not better. You're better together. That's what you are. It is that God has put the final say into one person's hand. And I firmly believe it happened for this reason. It's because when it was in our hand, men, we dropped the ball. To be more specific, we ate the fruit when we shouldn't have. So now it became our thing. Now we've got to make better decisions. It's on us to do better than Adam did, and to make godly, honorable, obedient decisions to Christ. So seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, is not easily provoked. There are two ways to take this is not easily provoked. Number one, it's not easily provoked into anger. The other way to take it is not easily provoked, as in love does not immediately just start. It is not something that just shows up. I was one of the few people in my English class who took Romeo and Juliet in the completely wrong way. We were supposed to write an essay on Romeo and Juliet or a book report on Romeo and Juliet, and I took it as a complete and total comedy. I did. No, it's a tragedy. It's a comedy. One minute he's all fawning over this cousin girl, and she's the love of his life, and she's everything to him. He sees Juliet, and all of a sudden, all that's forgotten, and now he's looking over at her, and he's saying these deep, wonderful words, what light through yonder window breaks, and just all these things. All of a sudden, he has completely dropped this one relationship that was like life and death to him to go over to another one. I can't remember how long the story was supposed to take place over. I think it was like 2 weeks or something like that. From seeing her in a window to killing himself was not long enough for real love to grow. I took it as a comedy. Almost like we're making fun of young people for how quickly they love each other. I had a cousin one time. And I hate when people do this. I wish people would stop doing this. When you talk to kids who are 5, 6, or 7, do you got any girlfriends? I hate that. Grow up. They're 6 or 7. What kind of weirdo are you? Sorry, that's not nice. But it's Sunday school.
as weird. Do you have any little girlfriends? I've got four. That's how I took Romeo and Juliet. As just the absurdity of young people in love. Well, brother, that weren't you a young person once? Absolutely. And that's the age I was when I thought it was hilarious because I saw that stuff all the time. My day, my night, my flower, my moon, my sun, my stars. And then a new girl comes in. That's how I read Romeo and Juliet. And folks, the first thing that hits you when you meet a fantastic person is not agape love. It's infatuation. Now, infatuation, whew, it's nice. Infatuation is nice. As they would say in Bambi, Twitter pated, just, ooh. It's nice. And you know what? If you can figure out agape love, you can stay infatuated all of your relationship. Now, more reasonably, it's going to pop in and pop out. Pop in and pop out, right? He gets into a bad habit of leaving his beard shavings in the sink. Infatuation might not be there so strong. But if both sides are pumping in that agape love, infatuation, she can stay. And many of you sit there and say, well, brother, it's been a long time since infatuation's been in this house. You start pouring some agape love in, and they'll be surprised when that lovey-dovey under the light of the pale moon stuff starts coming back. Infatuation is the first thing that hits. Infatuation and adoration. Those things will come and go. I pray they stay, and if it's gone, I pray it comes back. But I'll tell you this, love doesn't come quickly. Do you believe in love at first sight? I believe in infatuation at first sight. I believe in going gaga at first sight. I believe that weird cartoon wolf thing where he goes, oh, I believe that happens at first sight. But real agape love takes knowledge of a person, takes care for a person. It takes time. It takes time. You know, and that's important that we understand. That all those happy chemicals that come from meeting somebody fantastic, they're wonderful. Enjoy them. That's fantastic. But not quite love yet. Until one expresses all the love that God has shown, until one has understood it and felt it themselves, we cannot say that real love is there. Disney lied to us. Right? Oh, the prince who chases her down the stairs with the slipper in his hand, who loves her so dearly he doesn't remember her face and is praying to the gods of Shuville that he will find her again. Oh, she is laid out dormant in the forest, seven dwarves all around, and that kiss while she is sleeping. Folks, ladies, if a man were to wake you up by kissing you that you've never met before, I'm pretty sure it ain't the birds we're going to hear singing. It's a myth. It's a legend. It is friendship that becomes something deeper. And there must be a relationship, a knowledge of each other before there is friendship. And then from the friendship, then we express the godly love. And then we see the real thing. When infatuation meets godly agape love, whew, then you have something. And it is our job to make sure that what we have, if we have had it for a while, ages well. And understand this, that if we are in a situation where things are not the same, wait a minute, we've been going for a while, but the flavor's gone. We've been going for a while and things are missing. I pray you find where agape love could have more, or we could have more agape love in our relationship. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, we are grateful for the example that you've given us.